Hello, I'm Rafik, and you're watching the Garbled Twistery channel.
Well, hello, friend. It's that show, Garbled Twistery, and, well, what's going on the 1820 election is over, so now we're describing what happens in between. Wait, come again. The 1820 election is over, so now we're describing what happens in between. I mean, yeah, it is indeed 1821. We're kind of in between election years here, folks, but I mean, it's the era of good feeling still, right? Can't be too much happening these days, right? Wrong, I tell you. This is 1821. The former slaves, they're colonizers now. And I'm going to give you the inside scoop on how that came to be. Okay, so the first thing we got to talk about is, well, who sent them to go colonize anyways? And, like, that piece of the story starts right after the Great American Temper Tantrum version 1. You see, slavery was becoming much, much more trendy. Like, there were literally a million domestic slaves that were, like, sent south because the cotton gins are everywhere and the slave owners are trying to keep up so they can make their dirty money. Also, the slaves were being forced, in many cases, to have slave children. So by the mid-1700s, there were like 4 million freaking slaves. However, this wasn't like normalized for the entire country. No, siree. There were a bunch of protester preachers who wanted to free the slaves. There were also a bunch of northern states that were just straight up abolishing it. So that means the number of free folks who were born free was also increasing. Well, as free as the white northern legislators wanted them to be. Yeah, evidently it's very easy to not like slavery and still be incredibly racist because, well, not liking enslavement is an incredibly low bar, morally. But still, the population of free-ish black people was still increasing. Like, there was an increase from 1% to, like, 10% of the black Virginia free population in only, like, 2 decades after the Revlon War. Speaking of that war, the tea sippers were already sending their black people to their colony in West Africa and calling it Sierra Leone. They were also sending some of the slaves they got to fight the Yankees to Nova Scotia. You know, they did promise freedom. It's just an everybody's still racist and the weather is absolutely horrendous kind of freedom. Yeah, the tea sippers even relocated some of the Jamaica colony folks to Nova Scotia and basically sent whatever contraband slaves they would find as well after the slave trade was made illegal. Now, the tea sippers are actually starting to give the slave owners some ideas. And no, these aren't freeing their slaves kinds of ideas. You see, in 1800, a blacksmith named Gabriel Prosser learned how to read and planned a huge slave revolt. It got foiled, but the scope really scared the crap out of these slave owners. Quote, "These free black people are getting too free. There are entire counties down south where all it would take is one slave learning how to read to destroy this entire racket. We need to send the free ones away so nobody gets any ideas," unquote. And also, white people in general were just super racist about free black people, slave owner or not. What did that racism sound like? Well, it pretty much sounded exactly like today's racism. They're criminals, they're mentally inferior, they're taking our jobs somehow, even though the population ratio is 4-to-1. How does that even freaking work? They have zero morals because of that rap music. There's no way they can live in our society. They need to go back to Africa. God, don't you just hate how nothing's different about the sentiment? It tends to send a chill down the moral spine. But that wasn't the only motivation driving the desire for this new Pepsi flavor of colonization. Enter Paul Cuff, a half Ashanti, half Wampanoag, ship-owning Quaker who was there for the entire Sierra Leone colonization fiasco and genuinely had a desire not only to send freed slaves where they can supposedly be more free, but also work continuously to improve conditions in colonies like Sierra Leone and literally create lands where there will be little to no discrimination towards free black Americans. And Paul walked the walk, too. He started funding his own trips to Sierra Leone and, like, died in the middle of one of those trips. So, yeah. Cuff's idealistic utopia, combined with the fears of slave owners, combined with the pragmatic pessimism of abolitionists who believed true equality in America is impossible, combined with the everlasting and strong prejudices of white Americans regarding others in general, to form the American Colonization Society. So yeah, this is definitely the most ambitious crossover in U.S. history so far. Well, I guess as far as the white people are concerned. Yeah, most free black people didn't like this idea, like, at all. From that perspective, I have a quote. Quote, "The Constitution says this is our country, so this is our country. These white people really want to spend all this money to send us away into the middle of nowhere without even asking us. They don't even have a plan to help after the black people leave the boat, so we're staying. Deal with it." Unquote. Despite all of the resistance, in 1821, the American Colonoscopy Society started sending free black people to Liberia. Over like a 20-some-odd year period, about 5,000 were sent, which is not a lot at all. Oh, and only like 2,000 of them survived the first 20-some-odd years. Oh, and the capital of Liberia, which is still the capital to this day, even though Liberia started running itself on its own in, like, the 1840s, that just so happens to be conveniently right on the freaking coastline, it's called Monrovia. Yeah, it's named after freaking President Man Ray, who was all about the American Colonoscopy Society. So what does this all mean? Was this colonization pro or anti-slavery? Was it a good idea or not? Why do minorities stick around if they're being discriminated against so often? Well, I think I can answer that last one. You see, if you look at some of the first lyrics of that groundbreaking breakup song that spits in the face of the tea sippers, there's this thing called the pursuit of happiness that, according to the lyrics, everyone has a right to. And frankly, the United States wouldn't be what it is if instead of actively pursuing happiness like you're supposed to, everybody just gave up and left. It means a lot, man. If you've got something to say about this episode, about the podcast, or about, I don't know, collegiate chocolate sprinkles, you can find Garble Twistery on Facebook and Twitter, or you can head to garbletwistery.net and send a message in the contact section, or you can email moi. My email is Rafiq, that's R-A-F-I-Q, at garbletwistery.net. Also, I have a Patreon, so if you go to patreon.com and become a patron, you'll gain not only the access, but the ability to determine what topics get to be Patreon-exclusive bonus content. And the current bonus in production is about competitive card games. I know. Exciting. Anyways, next time, it's the second in-between election episode in this wonderful series, and we're gonna shift gears a little here and talk about selling fur. I know, how luxurious. Stay tuned.
This is the ending. I'm ending it now.
Half Ashanti, half Wampanoag, ship-owning Quaker,